Before I begin, I just want to take a moment to also thank Rabbi Arbisfeld for constantly supporting the Kol Madrashat Yom Rishon. I want to recognize the chairman of the Board of REITs, Rabbi Joel Schreiber, and recognize someone who the Rav always viewed as one of his Talmidim, and that is Rabbi Mr. Erwin Shapiro, and to recognize the fact that there was a special relationship that the Rav had with so many people in this room, and that he cherished, and I know they cherished him. No family since Rashi in the 11th and 12th centuries could boast as many influential Torah scholars as the Soloveitchik family. Whether it's the Beis Halevi, the Netziv, Rav Chaim of Lalazhin, Rav Chaim of Brisk, the Rav was a true student of the Soloveitchik family Mesorah. He learned from his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, from his mother, Pesha Feinstein. And as Rav Shechter Shlita mentioned, the Rav was at home in any sugya and shas, in any halachic ideal, and in any philosophic argument. He used his knowledge to introduce to us the full spectrum of Torah thought, and every shiur, another color woven in the tapestry of the Mesorah that he wished to communicate to his students. His clarity, his charisma, his excitement, and intellectual integrity made his daily shiur exciting and attracted many different types of thinkers and scholars. From young smicha students to veteran Rashi Yeshiva, they hung on every single word that the Rav spoke, and at different times of year, like during the month of Nisan, where YU still had school and the traditional yeshivot did not, The shiur room had an influx, let's just say, of people who didn't wear kippot sugot and dressed a little differently, but were also interested in fully benefiting from the Rav's Torah. While his philosophy of Judaism was often articulated in ideals from Kant, from Hegel, from Kierkegaard, and Cohen, it was always predicated on the ideals of the Rambam. And there is no Jewish community in the world that has not been touched by the Rav, and thanks to the OU continues to happen through the wonderful press that they have continued the Rav's Torah. So whether it's through the Rav himself, whether it's through the students, or whether it's through the writings that continue to grow because of the OU. However, there are a few observations that I would like to share, perhaps a little bit more reverent than Lewis's, but I'd like to share them anyways. In the Rav Shir, a student's age, experience, and family name were totally irrelevant. What mattered was one thing and one thing only, and that was the truth. At times, the Rav would dismiss a veteran scholar's thesis in favor of a young student's suggestion. I'll never forget the time that the Rav spent after 2.5 hours of Shir. The Rav then answered questions, either in a more formal way, where he was still sitting, or when the class was dismissed, people would just hang around the front of the shiur room until we had the responsibility to basically end that conversation. And the Rav answered every single question that a student would ask him. And then there was one time in which a student asked him a question. The Rav responded. And as it was over, the Rav asked me to walk him to where that student was, where he was eating lunch. The Rav walked over. It was actually right near where Chop Chop was. It was a burger place. And the Rav walked in there, and he said to the student, "I just want you to know that I think you're right. Your question's great. You're right. And I was wrong today. Tomorrow we're going to do over the whole shiur based on your question." There was a certain integrity. When the Rav presented an argument between various schools of thought, whether it's in the Talmud or in the Rishonim, you felt as if those personalities were actually in the room. As Rav Shechter said, it was in the Rav Shir that we felt that we met Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam or the Rashba or the Rif or the Ravid or the Ramban. It was in First Hall, room 401, that we became closely acquainted with the personality, with the language, and with the demeanor of the Rav's good friend, the Rambam. And the Rav had a reputation of being tough in shiur, not as tough in our days as he was in the days when people like Rabbi Schreiber and Rabbi Berman, Rabbi Kupiecki were in the shir. But he was still tough because he wanted to make sure that he was the best possible melamed. That's what he wanted to be known by. We would open his mail and read him his mail, and often the cover letter or the cover sheet would have a whole bunch of titles. And I sometimes would ask him, what do you want to be known as? Dr. Soloveitchik, Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Grand Rabbi. He said, the only thing I want to be known as is the Melamed of the, is the Melamed. And that's where Rav Moshe Feinstein commented that the Rav was the Melamed of the generation. He was the teacher of the generation. He taught us that Judaism is not a religion of simplicity, but one of nuance, that all forms of knowledge are sacred, that secular knowledge can color and enhance our understanding of Torah, and at the same time, all studies need to be framed through the prism of Torah values. He believes that YU was the bastion of this narrative, and therefore he championed this institution. He recognized that it was a beautiful yet complicated tapestry with an inherent tension in its weave. But I'd like to just spend a few minutes, because there are some more important speakers that you need to hear, about the Rav outside the shir room. The fact that in the shir, he may have been tough, he may have been laser-focused and laser-sharp, but outside the shir room, his demeanor was welcoming, gentle, and kind. He would do anything for a cause he believed in. If the Israeli government, like it did, asked him to go meet with the cardinal in Boston, it was not beneath him to get into a cab in Boston and to meet with the cardinal in Boston. If the Maimonides School needed funds, he would leave the bedside of his ill wife simply to help the Maimonides School. And while the minhag of brisk was after you buried someone never to visit the cemetery again, the Rav visited his wife's grave every single week because of the special relationship they had. So the fact that he was willing to leave the bedside to help an institution he believed in just speaks to the character of the person. He had not only inherited Rav Chaim's intellect, he had internalized Rav Chaim's ideals of chesed. Any of the shamashim remember how people left the Rav's apartment with a sense of comfort, either because the Rav had a solution to their problem or simply because he had listened so intently. When the Rav heard of a fellow human being's problem, be it that of Menachem Begin, I remember when Menachem Begin called the Rav's apartment to discuss the incidents in Israel and the conversation that they had, which I could not understand because it was totally in Yiddish. I remember the fact that the Rav would have conversations with heads of state, with significant personalities, or simply a simple Jew who was sent by his or her rabbi, and the Rav was so empathetic that you actually could see the pain and the anguish on his face and his frail body. It became harder for him to walk, harder for him to sleep, harder for him to eat, so much so that we would actually start setting the appointments in a way that the pastoral, emotional appointments didn't take place one after another, because we were concerned about how that would affect the Rav's health. He was an ish chesed who truly felt the pain of others, happy when he could halachically solve their dilemma, pained when he could not, sleepless and steadfast when he had the opportunity to marshal his halachic arsenal to help another human being. I remember one time in which there was a person who came into the apartment who was about to get married to a woman. And let's just say, based on Psukim in this week's Parsha, as well as the Daf Yomi, it was a halachically challenged situation if this man could get married to this woman. And the Rav spoke to this guy, this man, this couple, and the Rav said to the couple, come back the next day. As Lewis mentioned, there was one bedroom at this, when the family wasn't there, which was a big chunk of time towards the end of the time that the Rav was at YU, one of us slept in the apartment with the Rav. And it was around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I turned And I woke up and I saw that the Rav was not in the bed next to me. And I was just a little concerned. God forbid, maybe he got up. He fell. God forbid. And I jumped up and I went to look for him. And I saw him sitting in his chair in the parlor area and just sitting there. And I asked him, Rebbe, what's wrong? Do you need anything? And he said, I have this meeting today actually with this young couple. I know what I have to answer him, but I know the pain that it's going to cause, and I simply can't sleep. That was the Rav. And whether it was a visiting Rosh Yeshiva or a head of state or Mrs. O'Shea who cleans his apartment, more due to the mess that we created than the Rav created, he treated everyone in a very regal fashion, even when he was experiencing physical pain and discomfort. The fact that he made it his business to come to our weddings was something very special. Everybody invited the Rav to their wedding, but to the Shamashim, he made it his business to come to our weddings. I remember when I got engaged, I remember Lewis embarrassing me when I got engaged because a group of women from Stern College actually were meeting with the Rav. They had some philosophical questions to ask him. And I was just starting to date my wife, and Lewis was aware of that. And the Rav pointed to where my wife-to-be was sitting, pointed and said, that young lady is very smart. Who is she? And Lewis said, well, why don't you ask Brander? He's dating her. But he cared, so much so that I remember when we got engaged in Shir, he said, I understand there's the custom to have an engagement party. We're going to make an engagement party for Kenny. Let's pick a date. And he would pick a date. What do you do at these engagement parties? Someone said, well, you know, you get the food, you have a band, you have a this, you have a that. And the Rav gave out jobs to everybody. Naturally, he paid for the whole thing. And he came to the engagement party. Suffice it to say, I knew very few people at the engagement party. Very few people had any interest in coming because I was there or the Kala was there, but because the Rav was there. And unfortunately, and with a sense of sadness, our wedding was the last public event that the Rav went to. But he came, and he actually was Masada Kedushin, sitting underneath the chuppah because he couldn't even stand, because he felt a certain kinship to a group of young people who benefited so much more by being around his presence than anything that we would have anything that we gave him. Just since Lewis had no problem sharing some stories, I'll share one about him also. I remember when Lewis was studying for his master's from Revel, and he was about to take his orals, and the Rav asked him what the orals were on. And the Rav started asking him questions to prepare him for the orals. It was clear that the Rav's questions were a little bit harder than probably the ones he was going to ask for his orals, because no one in the apartment knew any answers to any of the questions the Rav was asking about issues of history and philosophy for his orals. And at that point, Lewis took out $100 from his wallet, billfold, gave it to the Rav, and said to him, how about if you take my orals for me? There was this informal relationship in the apartment, never disrespectful, but informal. He treated us like grandchildren, and he cared for us like grandchildren. I'm still in awe of the fact that in this search for a personal romantic relationship with God, the Rav intellectually explored all aspects of a covenant with God. Yet, in the Rav's existential journey, he concerned himself with the human condition. He was never alone, but sometimes he was lonely simply because he was searching for the meaning and searching for how to make sure that he was able to do whatever he could do, not only in the world of Torah, but in the world of interpersonal relationships. The Rav expressed this through the individuals he engaged, through the communities that he taught and inspired, and through his writings. He taught us of our responsibility as Torah Jews to care for and advance general society. For the Rav, being an Ish Halacha also meant being an Isha Chesed, and may his Torah continue to guide all of us and inspire us. Thank you.